drama at Citigroup.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. The world's largest bank didn't have any downtime this weekend. The embattled head of Citigroup stepped down after 4 years at the helm after the bank revealed another massive subprime loss in the billions. Our Stephen Beard in London has been following European reaction.
This has been reported here in pretty dramatic headlines. World's biggest bank's boss quit. Credit crunch claims its biggest casualty. Prince's departure was hardly unexpected, but it nevertheless has caused quite a splash. And the main reason for the splash is the revelation at the weekend that Citigroup is going to write off additional losses of between 8 and 11 billion, and that is the biggest individual subprime write-down so far.
Okay, but Stephen, Citigroup is the world's biggest bank. It's got trillions of dollars. Not that that's chump change, but you would imagine that that's not going to destroy Citigroup.
No, it certainly won't destroy Citigroup. These are, nevertheless, very heavy losses. So I think it's the worry, it's the uncertainty what other banks could be affected. I mean, it's interesting to note as regards Citigroup that their shares in Tokyo and London this morning rose, presumably on a certain amount of relief among Citigroup investors.
So, Stephen, this story also has a European dimension. What's the London angle here?
Well, it certainly does have a European dimension because of the size and the scale of Citigroup's operations. There are a lot of Citigroup employees here in London who are nervous about their future employment prospects. But one, at least, is fairly assured. The head of the European operations, Citigroup's European operations, Sir Wynne Bischoff, has been appointed temporary chief executive.
That's our Stephen Beard in London. We'll see how this hits the U.S. markets in a few hours. Wall Street closed up on Friday after a roller coaster week. A blockbuster IPO today in China. The Chinese government-owned PetroChina became the world's first company worth more than $1 trillion as it debuted on the Chinese market. Bonds buyers, listen up. The Supreme Court hears oral arguments today in a case that could have a major effect on the municipal bond market. The court will decide whether it's legal for states to exempt in-state bond interest from income tax while taxing out-of-state bonds. From Washington, Jeremy Hobson reports.
Giving tax breaks to investors who buy in-state municipal bonds is the law of the land in most of the country.
Anything that can be done to keep the interest rates low is certainly in a state's best interest.
Thomas Doe of the Massachusetts Research Firm Municipal Market Advisor says if the court finds the in-state discount unconstitutional,
the impact would be dramatic.
But the plaintiffs in the case have argued that favoring in-state bonds violates the Constitution. Brian Galley at the Florida State University Law School agrees.
It discriminates against interstate commerce. That is, if you buy stuff from the home team, you get a special discount that you don't get if you buy it from anybody else.
Many who've been watching the case closely think the court will reject that argument and allow states to continue offering discounts for in-state bonds. A decision is expected early next year. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
When the clock struck midnight, the writers walked away from their keyboards. The long-anticipated strike by the Writers Guild is officially on. Pickets are being organized at major studios during business hours today.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business Executive MBA programs, where working professionals earn Duke MBAs from locations around the world, online at DukeExecutiveMBA.com. By Grant Thornton, dedicated to serving their clients worldwide with a passion for the business of accounting. On the web at GrantThornton.com. And by BNY Mellon Wealth Management, since 1784, helping successful individuals and families protect and maximize wealth. BNYMellonWealthManagement.com.
Who's the richest dead person? After Elvis Presley, of course. The guy who created Snoopy and Charlie Brown. David McCallis just wrote a book biography about Charles Schulz. He says the late cartoonist was a master not just of storytelling, but he was an early pioneer of modern merchandising and cross-promotion.
The most produced Broadway musical in the history of Broadway musicals, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Up to 70 animated specials. There is endless numbers of products, literally 24,000 Peanuts products around the world right now. He loved the idea of Snoopy being turned into a plush toy. He saw them romping out of the comic strip and into Eastman Kodak's ads and into the Ford Falcon ads of the 60s and was thrilled.
You say in the book that he reshaped the way whole industries sold products. How do you mean?
The idea that we're going to take Snoopy and put him on blimps, the idea that we're going to take Snoopy and sell life insurance, the idea that we're going to have Peanuts the world over, there was no question that Peanuts was the leader in the field.
But was he involved in cutting these deals, like with Ford, with, you know, with Hollywood?
Absolutely. He was involved after a certain point, especially with the syndicate into the 70s and especially in the explosion of the 80s. This is the era of Pokemon and Ninja Turtles and all that, and Peanuts was still a leader. Charles Schulz was extremely generous and interested in giving people a fair shake.
And consequently, he was making a lot of cash himself.
$1.2 billion a year is what Peanuts became by the 90s. Schulz was making an enormous salary every year, and the comic strip was only one part of that, of course.
Now, he claimed he had no head for business, but I was really intrigued about the fight that he had with the United Syndicate over control of the strip. Again, that's something that was really prescient with today, because now everybody wants control of their own, you know, big successful artists want control of their own work. But he was fighting for such a thing at a time when that wasn't common, right?
Well, when he started, cartoonists were usually 50-50 partners with a syndicate. And United Features Syndicate was the owner and the copyright of Peanuts. Schulz, by the 70s and 80s, realized that he should, like so many others in the business who had gotten their own copyrights and or a greater portion of the control of licensed products, should have that himself. Peanuts was an enormous part of United Features Syndicate's annual income.
David Michaelis is the author of the new bestseller, Schulz and Peanuts. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy the day.